Chapter 5. James. The Ashanti people were at war with the British. They had killed Governor Charles McCarthy and put his head on a stick outside of the Ashanti King's palace as a warning to anyone who was against them. James, who was named after his grandfather, James Collins, was not worried about the Ashanti people coming to hurt his village. His father was Quay, a very powerful man in their Fanti village, and his mother was Nanaya, the eldest daughter of the Ashanti king. Because of this, James knew that they would be safe from an Ashanti attack. James! James looked up to see his father walking toward him with one of the white men from the castle. "Are you sure we should tell him this, Quay?" asked the white man. "Of course," said Quay. "He's a man now, not a boy. He'll be the leader of this village one day, so he needs to know." The white man did not look happy, but he nodded. "Your grandfather, the Ashanti king, has died," he told James. "The Ashanti people think we killed him to get revenge for them killing Governor McCarthy."
"And did you?"
James asked. He suddenly started to feel angry.
James knew that it was because of the British that the Fanti and Ashanti villages had been at war for years. The British knew that people would be sold as prisoners to trade into slavery, no matter who won the fighting. James would not be surprised to find out that the British had killed his grandfather, just to encourage more fighting.
"Your mother wants to go to the funeral," said Quay. "But it's too dangerous," said the white man. "The Ashanti know you've been working with us for years. Even Nanaya, being his daughter, might not protect you." Quay looked worried, and James suddenly felt embarrassed by his father, just like his mother did. Nanaya did not love Quay. She thought that he was a weak man, and James agreed with her.
"We'll go," said James firmly. "Not going to his funeral is a sin we would never be forgiven for."
Nanaya and Quay argued on the way to the funeral, but this was nothing new to James. When he was a child, they would fight all the time.
"James Richard Collins," his mother would shout. "James Richard Collins, you gave your son three white names. Three."
"I don't see a problem with that," his father would reply. "He's still a prince. I've given him a powerful name."
James knew his parents only got married to protect Quay and his village from being attacked by the Ashanti people. Their marriage had been political, and he wondered if this was enough to keep them together now. The Ashanti king's palace was far away in a large city called Kumasi, so they stopped to rest in a small village about halfway there. Once they arrived at the village, Nanaya immediately went to rest while James and Quay drank wine around the fire with one of Quay's old friends, David.
"I see your wife is still giving you trouble," said David.
"Nothing will ever make her happy," said Quay.
"That's what happens when you marry for politics instead of love," said David.
He turned to James and smiled.
"You're almost old enough to get married, aren't you? Do you have someone you like?"
"Nanaya and I have already chosen a wife for him," said Quay.
James knew who his wife would be, and he was not happy about it. Her name was Ama Ata, and she was the daughter of Chief Abaeku Badu's son. Their wedding was planned to happen the night before James's 18th birthday. James knew Ama very well, but he did not like her, and he knew that he would never love her. But James also knew that it did not matter. He would marry her for the good of the village, just like his parents had done.
"Is it true?" David asked suddenly. "I heard that the British will stop slavery soon."
Quay shrugged his shoulders. When James was born,
They told us that the slave trade was stopping and that we couldn't sell slaves to America anymore, but it never really stopped. James had heard his father say this before. The British were no longer selling slaves to the Americans, but slavery had not ended, and his father did not think that it would ever end. When he was younger, James did not understand what his father meant, but now he did. The British did not want to leave Africa, even once slavery was over. They owned the castle, and they wanted to own all of Africa, too. When they arrived at the palace, Nana Ya's eldest brother, Kofi, came to meet them. He took them to a large room filled with food and told them some of the things that had happened since they began their journey. "I'm sorry, sister, but we had to bury him quickly," Kofi said. "We couldn't wait for you." Nana Ya nodded. "Of course. I'm just happy to be here for the funeral." As Nana Ya and Kofi spoke, James noticed that his uncle did not speak to his father at all. He ignored him completely. On the morning of the funeral, the dead Ashanti King's family sat in a single row so that they could be greeted by the mourners as they entered the palace. James, dressed in black and red funeral clothes, sat next to his father. One by one, people entered the palace to show their respect for their dead king. They came up to James and shook his hands and offered their sympathies before moving to the next person in the line. By the time the last few mourners had entered the palace, the sun was at its highest point in the sky. James was hot and tired, but there were still people to greet. "I hope the old king can rest well now." James looked up and saw the loveliest girl he had ever seen standing in front of him. Unlike the other mourners, she did not try to shake his hand. "Why won't you shake hands?" asked James. "Respectfully, I won't shake the hand of a slaver," she said politely before walking away. James tried to watch her, but he quickly lost her in the crowd. Although he could not see her, James could not stop thinking about what she had said. He felt annoyed and ashamed at the same time. After the funeral had finished, James went to find his cousin, Kwame. Kwame and James were good friends, and James trusted him not to tell anyone his secrets. "Kwame, can you help me find a girl I have just met?" asked James. Kwame laughed loudly. "Of course, I know every girl in the town. Describe her to me." James described the girl. He told Kwame how her hair was worn in a puff at the top of her head, that she had a space between her two front teeth, and that she was beautiful. Kwame immediately knew who she was. He told James where to find her and pointed him in the right direction. When James found her, she was carrying a bucket of water on her head. "Can I help you with that?" asked James. "No, thank you," the girl replied. "You shouldn't be doing this kind of work." "Call me James." "James," she repeated. "James." "What's your name?" "Akosia Mensa." They walked to Akosia's hut on the edge of the town. James asked her lots of questions as they walked. He wanted to know everything he could about her. "Why didn't you shake my hand at the funeral?" "I told you," said Akosia. "I won't ever shake the hand of a Fanti slaver." James was angry. "Why are you calling me a Fanti slaver? I'm Fanti, but I'm also Ashanti. My grandfather was your king." Akosia smiled at him. "When I was younger, there was a war between my village and another one. The Fanti took three of my brothers." James did not say anything for a while. He was sorry that she had lost her brothers, but he knew that it was just a part of life. His own mother had been stolen from her family after all. "I know what you're thinking," said Akosia.
Everyone is involved in slavery, even my own people, so how can I judge you? After I lost my brothers, I decided that I didn't want to be part of the fighting anymore. I'm not an Ashanti. I'm just me. They walked for a little while longer before James asked her the question that had been on his mind since the first time he saw her. Are you promised to anyone? Ecosia looked at him shyly. Not yet. I want to marry you, said James. You can't, said Ecosia. But James did not care. He did not want to have a loveless, political marriage like his parents. He wanted to marry for love. He wanted to marry Ecosia. I will marry you, said James firmly. But you'll have to wait for me. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I'll come back for you. I promise. Do you trust me? No, said Ecosia. But if you come back for me, then you'll earn my trust. James nodded. He did not know how he would do it, but he knew he would come back for Ecosia one day. James returned to his village and married Ama Ata. They had been married for 3 months, but they had still not slept together. Emma was beginning to grow impatient. What's wrong with you? Emma asked one day. Are you sick? Go see the medicine woman. I need to get pregnant soon, or people will start to think there's something wrong with me. James felt bad for her, so he agreed to visit the medicine woman, even though he knew that she would not be able to help him. The medicine woman, Mampang, knew it too. What are you doing here? Mampang asked when James entered her hut. I can't help you. My medicine only works for people who want it to work, and we both know that you don't. James was too surprised to say anything. Tell me what you want, said Mampang. I want to marry an Ashanti girl named Ecosia. I want to leave my family without them knowing I left them. Then do it, said Mampang. And then she added, I heard the Ashanti army will be near our village soon. James nodded. He knew what he had to do. When James returned home to Ama, she was unhappy. James avoided her and went to have dinner with his grandmother, Afia, who had come to visit the village. What's wrong? Asked Afia immediately. James felt himself begin to cry. What if I'm a weak man, just like my father? Everyone is weak most of the time, said Afia after a long moment of silence. But if we don't like the person we've become, should we just do nothing? No. I think that it's possible to choose a new path. Then, Afia smiled, and James cried in his grandmother's arms. The next day, James told his family he was going to Cape Coast Castle with Afia, but instead, he went to a village not far away called Ifutu. Mampang had told him that the Ashanti army would soon be in Ifutu. He found a job working for an old doctor who Afia knew and waited patiently for his moment. 1 month after he arrived in Ifutu, it happened. The Ashanti army attacked. James ran away with the villagers, but was chased by an Ashanti soldier. The last thing he wondered, before everything went black, was if he had made a mistake. When he woke up, his whole body ached. He felt as if he had been beaten with a rock. Then he noticed an Ashanti soldier was standing next to him. I can't believe you're not dead, said the soldier. Are you hurt? James shook his head. You're the grandson of the old Ashanti king, aren't you? Asked the soldier. I remember you from the funeral. James suddenly felt hopeful. Does anyone else know I'm alive? No. They all think you're dead. Good, said James. You have to tell everyone that I died in this war. Will you do that? I can't, said the man. You have to, said James, and he knew that the man would.
After the man left, James traveled back to Ecosia's village, and when he finally arrived, he found her waiting for him.